listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 180 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show, and today I'm really excited about the episode. We have Charles Alexander on the podcast. He has a company called Streaming Promotions. You can find it at streamingpromotions.com. And his whole business is pitching artist music for placement on Spotify playlists. And it's amazing the kind of success we're seeing here at CD Baby for artists that are getting their songs on playlists. And so in today's episode, we're going to talk about what makes a good playlist, how you get your music on playlist, what to look for, and all that. It's going to be a great episode. It's going to be a two-parter. First part's going to be Charles Alexander, and we're going to follow it up with part two, where Chris and I break down some of the playlisting experiments we've been doing and some of the success and failures we've been having in that area. If playlisting is something new to you, the idea of creating playlists on Spotify, I really encourage you to dig in and take notice, because there's some really cool things happening there on the Spotify platform. But most importantly, if you don't have your music distributed worldwide to Spotify, you need to do that right now. Head on over to members.cdbaby.com and get your music distributed. It's more important than ever to make sure your music is available in all the various platforms that music fans are engaging with music. Don't miss out on opportunities for your music. Get your music out there. And at CD Baby, we have new integrated cover song licensing for singles. We have daily trending reports, which give you so much information about what's going on with your music. And it tells you the top playlists that are using your music, which is amazing. And you'll be hearing about that in part two of this episode. So much opportunity that you can discover by having access to real data, and we provide that for you. So head on over to members.cdbaby.com, get your music out there, get it out on Spotify, all your tracks, and then start playlisting. Also, I want to hear feedback from you guys, questions, comments about playlists. If you've had some success or just aren't sure you're understanding what's going on the platform, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209. You can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com, or you can just head on over to the podcast website at cdbabypodcast.com and leave a comment or question there. And with that being said, let's get to my interview with Charles Alexander. Well, joining me on the line is Charles Alexander. Charles, how are you?
I'm really, really well. How are you, Kevin?
I'm doing well. I'm very excited to have you on the podcast. Actually, we've been building a buzz about this interview, so you better deliver.
No pressure whatsoever.
No pressure at all. I've actually had people emailing me, when is that playlisting episode going to happen that you've been talking about? Because I'm really excited about it. I'm like, So the pressure's on, and I'm excited to have you on the podcast for a couple reasons. One, I think you have a lot of great information to share, but also I've kind of gone on a personal journey with playlisting myself. When you and I first met, I remember our publicist, Dimitri, he's like, you should meet my friend Charles, and the concept of the power of playlisting was, I knew it was there somewhere, but really hadn't experienced it or really got in depth with it. Mm. And then you and I talk, you spoke at our conference, and Chris, who's on the podcast with me, we've both been trying some things with playlisting. I've actually stumbled across a little bit of playlisting success myself, and it's been fun and a fun journey. So I'm really excited to have you on the podcast to talk more about it and help artists understand the possibilities that are there.
Yeah, you're very, very kind. I'm excited to do this. I've been looking forward to it too. And yeah, so you know, I think it's a really new and exciting time in the world of trying to get your music heard. And yeah, so we're obviously bullish on the whole thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, and in the intro, I mentioned that you've got a company that people can find out more information about it at streamingpromotions.com, where you're actually taking artist tracks and pitching them for playlist placement. Instead of, you know, back in the day, pitching to radio programmers, we're now pitching towards playlist owners. So I think that's fascinating, and we'll definitely dive into all of that. But I wanted to start off with the idea of what are we even talking about when we're talking about playlists? Because I think there's artists that, you know, we're like me, that was like, they understand that you can do these things, or maybe playlisting is brand new to some of our listeners, and just what we're even talking about in the first place. So there's that level of understanding going into the conversation.
Yeah. So, you know, we specifically, most of our work revolves around these entities called playlists on the Spotify platform. So in a nutshell, what we do is very similar to what a publicist or, you know, maybe less so a radio programmer would do when they take, or a radio promoter would do when they take your music and they say, all right, we're going to go pitch your music to these media outlets or to this radio station, and we're going to try to get your music placed or played on those radio stations, or your music placed on these media outlets. So in the Spotify ecosystem, you basically have three sort of, you know, large categories of these things called a playlist. And a playlist basically is a list of songs that exist on the Spotify platform. So they've been released on the platform through your digital distribution service, like CD Baby, for example. And your music is out there on Spotify, but then that doesn't necessarily mean that the music is being heard or listened to any sort of appreciable degree. So what happens is, if you get these tracks or albums or whatever on a playlist, those playlists, for the most part, have a large number of followers. And so the followers on those playlists, when they see your song on that playlist, end up playing that your song, mostly because they're a fan of the playlist. As a result of being a fan or a follower of that playlist, they then might become a fan or a follower of you, depending on whether, you know, they have any affinity for your music. So on the Spotify platform, there's sort of three large categories of playlists. The first big category are the editorial playlists that Spotify, the company themselves, curate and own. And these tend to be the ones that really move the needle in the biggest way, or in the most appreciable way, or in a large kind of, they really move the needle very effectively, or can get you a huge number of impressions and listens. So for example, there's a playlist called Your Favorite Coffee House, and that particular playlist is a Spotify editorial playlist, has something like 1.5 million followers on it. And if you get your music on that particular playlist, then chances are you'll clock in at about 30,000 streams a week, more or less, depending on where you are on that playlist in terms of the order of that playlist. So that's the first big category, the in-house editorial stuff. So New Music Friday is another Spotify editorial playlist. So that's one category. And then the next category is this thing called a branded playlist, which is owned by individual or private entities, but they function under a larger brand. So if you're familiar with things like Filter or Dixter or Topsify, those three brands are actually managed by the three major record labels. So Topsify is owned by Warner, Filter by Sony, and Dixter by Universal Music. And they program and curate their own collection of playlists that usually are run by people who work for those respective companies. But as an independent, you can still get on some of those playlists depending on the music, the mood, the genre, and whether your music fits in those playlists or not. And the final group, which is where we do most of our work, are the private or individual user-generated playlists. So if you were to sort of like take our targets and divide them into sections, about 60 to 70% of our targets revolve around the individual curator or user-generated playlists, and then about probably 20 to 30%, you know, it fluctuates between the Spotify editorial stuff and the branded playlist. So an example of a really good you know, individual playlist is this song, is this playlist called Sad Songs, that's run by a guy named Carlos, who owns a group of playlists under the Indie Mono moniker. And Sad Songs is a really important, you know, again, another important needle mover in terms of, if you get your song on that playlist, chances are you're going to get a lot of impressions, a lot of followers, and a lot of visibility for your track. So that, in a nutshell, is what playlists are and how they function and how they exist in the platform.
That was excellent. You actually answered, hit on some of my questions already, but I think you also illuminated some things that I hadn't really, some roads I hadn't thought about going down. But first, you're really talking about, like, a lot of the playlisting activity is really native to the Spotify platform, is what we're talking about. Even though there are, like, playlists on Apple Music and and other services, but where the big activity that we're talking about is really Spotify, correct?
Correct. I think as a platform, it's probably the most democratic one out there compared to Apple or, you know, or any of the other sort of playlist-focused music platforms, right? So like Apple Music, you know, their curators are pretty much in-house. And the closest thing is probably something called Deezer. And Deezer is mostly a platform that's hugely popular and has large adoption in Europe. But Deezer is another example of, you know, a sort of a democratic, user-generated, playlist-driven platform. But Spotify, you know, I mean, I don't think it's any accident that they're the, you know, the largest streaming platform. Yeah.
You mentioned the editorial Spotify playlist, and those are really the ones when you log in, you see a lot of those front and center, right? When you log in. You mentioned that coffee house one. There's an artist here at CD Baby that has a track on one of their coffee house playlists, and he's had over 50 million streams, mainly from that Spotify coffee house playlist. It's pretty amazing.
Yep.
You broke it down into three buckets of playlists: the editorial, the branded, and the private. Clearly, us as users and people listening to this podcast, we can only create private playlists. Does that mean that it's impossible for people to find a playlist we might create for our own music? Or, you know, you mentioned also finding some of these people being the ones that you seek out the most. How do you even find those type of playlists or get your playlist found when you're at that level and aren't obviously going to be featured on the homepage of Spotify?
Right. So I think before I answer that question, I think it might be more useful to start thinking about how the platform actually works in terms of how music is discovered there, or sort of like what makes, you know, if you were to sort of like have this mental image of, say, this magical dashboard behind the whole Spotify ecosystem, and how do you make your song or your album light up on this magical dashboard, right? So what makes that happen? Because there are multiple factors that go into that. I'm not sure if I understand all of them, but then we have a pretty good handle on some of them. So what I think folks first need to understand is that besides the music being just amazing and great, is that, you know, for good, bad, or indifferent, it's a platform that is really geared and focused towards the millennial demographic. So one of the first things I think folks need to understand is that if you think your music is going to resonate with the millennial group, then I think, you know, that's one of the first things you need to think about and kind of maybe ask yourself that question. The second thing is, you know, do you have a campaign or do you have a concerted effort to kind of get other tastemakers involved in sort of recognizing your music and providing it some visibility. What do I mean by that? So our blogs, for example, like, you know, that there's so many wonderful blogs like Noisy and Vice, and whether you have a campaign that is going to make your music get heard on those blogs and sort of relative or connected or relevant tastemakers. So besides it being something millennials would like, you know, are there other tastemakers who have bought into your music? And then finally, well, not finally, but one of the other factors is, how's your social media engagement and adoption? So for example, does your music already have a lot of play and a lot of engagement and a lot of adoption, say on a platform like YouTube? Or does your social media engagement sort of reflect that? So what I mean by social media engagement is not just raw numbers, because we all know those numbers can be gamed, but at the same time, it's not the raw numbers, it's more of what percentage or what cross-section or what segment of the folks who follow you on social media are quote-unquote real and are actually engaged when you put out information or when you release music or when you try to have a conversation with them. Those are some of the, you know, the sort of the big touch points in terms of what makes your music resonate in the Spotify platform. So if some of those things apply to you, great. If none of those things apply to you, then you need to start working towards making those things apply to you. And so the first step then is that, you know, instead of like right off the bat trying to go after Spotify editorial, you reach out to some of the smaller playlists or playlists that actually want to be recognized and want followers and want engagement. So let's just say, you know, for the sake of conversation, you know, I have a playlist called NFL Number One Hits. And, you know, I think it has like 8 followers on it. So someone, right? So someone like me, you know, I'm trying to do everything I can to get more followers on that playlist. So I'm going to be on the lookout for more music that fits on that playlist. But above and beyond that is that I want to know if I can add music for which the artist or the band or whomever is involved with that band is going to be able to bring me more followers by function of them already having a fan base. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think that will make it make more sense for some of the folks. Like, you know, we actually just launched a piano playlist today for CD Baby, because we have a huge amount of amazing piano players, solo piano players that distribute through us. And they also have massive followings. The idea of them having a big social presence, some of them do, may not resonate, but I could see translating that to be like, if you have a giant email list, like if you contacted the playlist guy and saying, hey, I've got, you know, an email list of 5,000 names, I'll email them all about this playlist and tell them to follow you if you add me to your playlist. I could see, you know, just leveraging their fans is what they need to be thinking about.
Exactly. And really, at the end of the day, that's the fundamental strategy. How can you get your fans or fans in the playlist to engage with you and with the playlist? So when you get an ad, one of the things we do is that have the artist or the band, whomever gets added, to do shout outs to the playlist and say, this is amazing, thank you for adding me. And then not only, first of all, do your fans and does whomever you're, you know, that's following your career can sort of see some credibility added to your music. But the other is also true, which is for the playlist, they might get some fans who end up following their playlist. So it's a win-win all around, you know? Yeah. So that in a nutshell should be like a step one strategy, I think. And for some of these playlists like Indie Mono, you know, so Carlos, for example, has a website. You can go to indiemono.com and you can submit your music there for him to consider. So, you know, that's pretty straightforward. Other playlists might not be as straightforward, but, you know, the internet is your friend, and you can always dig through socials and try to find out how to get in touch with some of these curators.
Interesting. So I want to ask this question just for the sake of artists. You know, they're looking online, and some of those playlists, like you mentioned, only have a few followers. Or then there's some that have a lot, but you can't tell if anyone's actually listening to it. Mm-hmm. What makes a good playlist? Are there some things that people should be looking for that might be worth their time to pursue? I mean, I think you told me that there's actually over like a billion playlists. So it's not like you're going to want to just mass email every one of them. You're going to have to get selective, and some of them are going to be good and some of them aren't. What are some things that, some key indicators of a good playlist, not only for artists trying to get placed, but as if they're thinking, hey, I might try creating some playlists around our music that might drive activity. What are some examples?
That's a great question. And if I said there was a billion playlists out there, I probably lied. But you know,
there probably are, though. Somebody told me that.
On Spotify, that would be a lot. So, you know, I really do think that we might be in, you know, there might be a million playlists or something like that, you know, on the platform. But I'll really have to go and look. So I think it helps to think about Spotify or, you know, like most of these platforms. You know, I think a lot of people think of them as, and this is probably how the companies themselves want you to think about them, as music platforms that happen to have a social media component or a social component. I tend to think of Spotify as a social media platform that happens to have a music component. So I think that's probably the right orientation. So you need to first then think about what makes a social media platform work or why those things work. And also, in terms of playlists, how would someone go find a playlist? The number one way that most people find things on the internet is through Google. So whatever playlist you create or try to build, try to keep in mind the SEO factor behind your playlist. And for those of you who don't know what SEO is, SEO is just search engine optimization. So if someone plugs in, so for example, rock music playlist, that doesn't really maybe paint the whole picture about your particular playlist. But if you put together a playlist that said rock music that rocks my world, or you know, or something along the lines of music that rocks my world at bedtime, or you know, like rockers who set my hair on fire, theme songs, boring theme songs made exciting, or you know, something along those lines. That your playlist should have a descriptor or a title that's really vivid and descriptive, and that can sort of hit some of the high points on SEO. It's, you know, so I think that's strategy one. And I can't remember if this has changed, but it used to be that only on a verified playlist could you add like this whole description section. But I think now on Spotify, even if you aren't verified, you can add custom art and custom descriptions to your individual playlist. So all those things will help gain your playlist some visibility. It's incredibly hard, but between that and having a website, you know, that has a landing page that describes your playlist, has a follower button on it, and tells you more about the playlist and what kinds of music that's on there, maybe even highlighting and reviewing some of the music and featuring some of the artists. I think all those things help, not just from the perspective of telling people what the playlist is about, but there are more online properties describing and talking about that playlist.
And so it takes a while for Spotify to actually recognize your playlist, correct? As far as their native search function?
Yes. Yep, sure. I mean, does.
Is there any sort of known threshold that you have to reach of followers or plays that it generates in order to pop up into their native search function?
So I don't think there's a follower floor that you need to meet in order for it to pop up on the search function. What I think needs to happen is that it, first of all, needs to be on the system long enough. I'm not really sure what that time frame is. But generally speaking, we've seen things above 2 to 3 weeks. Then it's if you're like talking about it or sharing the link, especially the Spotify focused link, you know, so if you can sort of shorten a playlist down to its Spotify component by using a link shortener like Bitly. So if you like stick an entire playlist link into Bitly, it'll give you the Spotify abbreviated link. And if you share that link around your socials and people start, you know, playing it, they don't even necessarily have to follow it, but if that playlist gets shared and played, then that kind of like gives it more visibility and recognition through SEO, you know. So yeah, that's what kind of helps, I think. So
you're talking about sharing that link outside of the Spotify platform, so that they're seeing that there's traffic coming into these places.
Correct.
I want to go back to talking about the private users and a little bit more about how do I identify what might be a good playlist over another? Are there some basic rules that a playlist should follow to be successful, like number of tracks, number of how often it changes out, its content? I mean, what are some tips there? So say I'm an artist and I'm like, hey, I found these 10 playlists I think might be worth pitching on my music. This one hasn't been updated for a year, but it looks like it has a lot of followers. This one has 1,000 tracks, or what? What are some things that I should look at as like, this playlist might be more vibrant and performing better than the others?
Oh, great question. So the number one thing is that any playlist that has less than 20 songs or 22 songs on it is probably something you should probably ignore. And then if you look at the playlist and you sort it by the date of the last added track, it probably should not be older than 3 months. You know, that's probably a bare minimum. Certainly, I wouldn't go bother with any playlist that hasn't been updated in more than 6 months, regardless of the number of followers, because the number one thing you can learn from that is that that's a curator that maybe isn't committed to that playlist and is not going to work hard at getting that playlist heard or updated, or it isn't their central focus, you know. So we think 1 week to 2 weeks is probably optimal. Some playlists are updated daily, but what we've noticed on the updated daily playlist is that then the playlist becomes pretty unwieldy in terms of the number of songs that's on there. So, you know, I certainly wouldn't want to be on a playlist that, say, has more than 150 or 200 songs, because if you're on top of that playlist, that's one thing. But if you're in the middle of a playlist, then chances are, in a 100 to 200 song playlist, you probably are not going to be heard in any sort of regular frequency, because by the time they get to like song number 80, someone's probably done listening to the playlist, you know, or actually song number 60 or song number 50, because I don't know of many people who run around listening to the same playlist for more than 3 or 4 hours. So, you know, so some of it is just math. Some of it is just strategic. So what we found works is that, you know, a playlist with a minimum of 20-25 songs, 50 to 75 to 80 is probably, you know, optimal. Depending on how popular a playlist or who the curator is and what they've got going on, you know, we can get to 150, 160 songs and still be effective. But and again, there's the law of diminishing returns as to where the placement of the song is. And anything above that is just, you know, I've seen playlists with like 400 songs on it, and I'm kind of going, how does this even happen? You know? So if you're building a playlist or looking for a playlist, I would certainly prioritize playlists that are updated more often, and that maybe have, you know, at a bare minimum, just for the stream count, you know, about 25 to 50 followers for the stream count end of things. But, you know, the Spotify, in terms of the bigger picture, what I think you want to focus on and the reason you want to get on playlists is so that more fans and more people on the platform save the music that they hear on a playlist that's yours to their own personal playlist. That's the name of the whole game. So the more people who save your music to their playlist is what's really going to, you know, influence the platform to sort of pay attention to your music. So the moment you get your music up on Spotify, you know, if you have a good email list, just ask your fans to start saving your music to their own personal playlist.
Yeah, and then also beyond just playlisting, the more Spotify sees people interacting with an artist, the more that music will bubble up in their like Discover Weekly playlist that Correct. Spotify is actually curating automatically, which are quite good. They get a lot of rave reviews, and I've been enjoying it, and it is interesting as I listen to different stuff how I can see that playlist morph week by week. We talked a little bit about how do you get people to find my playlist. So is there any specific online directory that you know of as a go-to directory where people post their playlists on public websites? I've seen a couple, but I don't know. It's not like there's one obvious place. So I was just curious if there's like an obvious, oh, if you're going to go look at one website or if you're going to post your playlist on a website to, you know, try and build that SEO traffic, this is where you should go.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple, I guess. Myplaylists.com is one. And there's another one, I think sharemyplaylists.com or .net. That's another one. But honestly, you know, I think if you just use the search box on Spotify, and let's just say, you know, you're into pop music or indie pop, if you just plug in indie pop, you know, in the search box, what should happen, especially on your desktop application, when you plug in indie space pop in that search box, what you should see is different categories of stuff pop up in the preview box. So there should be artists, there should be songs, and then there's a section called playlists. And the playlist section usually highlights the first three or four playlists that it thinks you should be paying attention to. But then if you click on that playlist subtopic, a whole slew of playlists should start populating on your screen. And then you can sort of sort through those playlists and see which ones, you know, sort of make sense to follow or make sense to reach out to. That's really what we end up doing, is that we end up going, okay, so let's just say, you know, like this week, and let's just say we haven't worked on a metal project for a while. We'll just plug in metal rock or hard metal or heavy rock or hard rock into the browser thing, and then we'll see what playlists pop up. And then we go about trying to figure out if these are playlists worth paying attention to based on when the last ad was made. So as a rule of thumb, you know, and I think me and my pitch team here, we also have a different sort of subtle criteria. But for me, it's like if anything hasn't been updated in 3 months, then I'm probably less inclined to reach out to that curator and ask them to add music. So, you know, so once I find out what those playlists are, and if it's a playlist that I think sounds cool and I think it's a cool title, and then if I look through the playlist and I listen to the playlist, and, you know, in the first 12, 15, 20 songs, those first 15, 20 songs, they need to sort of like keep me engaged, you know. And if they don't, if the person who is curating that playlist isn't doing a good job, then I just move on. But then if the playlist, you know, has got me engaged and it's keeping my attention, you know, while I'm doing something else and listening to it, then I'm probably going to reach out to that curator and ask them to see if they'll add the music. Does that make sense?
Yes. As an artist, how should I go about reaching out to these people, or should I, or what's kind of the strategy of like, okay, I've identified some playlists, these seem to be the good ones, and now I'm about to reach out to them. I'm assuming I'm going to have to dig around on the internet to try and find some contact information because Spotify doesn't give it to me. But right. Say I do that work and find it, or they have a website, like you said, IndieMono. What should I be asking them for when I reach out to them?
Right. So I think, you know, so this is where I think you know, it's sort of like every other aspect of the music business, right? So if you're going to run campaigns and if you're doing releases, there's nothing that people are doing in terms of companies or whatever that you can't personally do mechanistically. The difference is going to be that do you have the bandwidth and do you have the relationship? So when I say bandwidth, do you have the time to sort of dig through all the stuff you need to dig through to find out who these people are and for you to start building that relationship? If the answer is yes, then you should totally do this. So like I said before, the internet is your friend. All the social media outlets and Spotify, right? So Spotify is connected via social media platforms, or you can connect via a social media platform. And then it's just pattern matching in terms of looking at a playlist and seeing who the curator is, and then looking on other social networks and trying to figure out how to reach out to those folks. That, in a nutshell, is how you do it. So, you know, and the actual labor of it and the actual sort of sweat of it is just, it's just all elbow grease. So not only then do you have to find the person and, you know, kind of confirm that the person who's the curator on this particular playlist is actually the person that you're reaching out to. So that's step number one. And that, again, you know, you want to go through your matrix of trying to figure out, okay, is this John Smith the John Smith? you know, so because then when you go look, you know, let's just say, you know, you look at a playlist and you go, John Smith, wonder if John Smith has a Facebook account. Well, then you plug in John Smith into Facebook and that's like 222 John Smiths. Which John Smith do you go after? Right. So that's all just labor. That's just elbow grease. And there isn't sort of a shortcut method to kind of figuring out who this person is. And so you just have to do that. And once you do that, so, you know, you're fairly certain this is the person, then you need to reach out to them and go, hey, you know, I know about your playlist. It's great. Would you consider adding mine? And I'll just tell you from experience with us, in about 75 to 80% of cases, they never respond because they're like, who is this creep who's stalking me on, you know, social? To kind of like have them add the music. Or they're looking at your profile and kind of going, wait a minute, are you a musician? If you're a musician, how many followers do you have? Are you popular? Do people like you? Should I even consider adding your music? You know, all that kind of stuff goes through their head in terms of conversation. So I think the number one thing you need to be able to offer, you're not doing an ask. What you're really doing is making an offer of help in terms of saying, hey, I dig your playlist. I think I can help you get more followers. Or I think I can get the word out about what you're doing and help you build your playlist or something. And maybe my music can help. But maybe the better thing to do is for you to actually suggest or recommend someone else's music first and say, this band that I love is amazing. They'd be perfect for your playlist. You should consider adding them, you know, and not even just plug your own stuff first. And then you build your relationship. And then once you get to a point where everybody's comfortable, then you can say, hey, by the way, you know, I've got the stuff. It might fit your stuff. It might not. But maybe you can give it a listen. Let me know what you think. You know, so I think that's a more coherent, cogent, long-term strategy. Then, you know, you have a release, you want streams, so you're going to just hit up everybody. No, that rarely, rarely works. So,
but even though you say that, probably 9 out of 10 people listening to this podcast are going to go do that exact same thing.
Exactly. Well, you know, and
maybe not 9 out of 10. I'll give our podcast listeners more credit. Maybe 50-50.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's just life. So,
yeah. Yeah. How long does these larger playlists that you're working at that maybe have developed a little bit more of a brand, but they're still independent, they're not owned by the majors and they're not a Spotify playlist, how long do they typically keep a track in a playlist? So when you're pitching and working with a client to help get placements, what is sort of the expectation of, hey, we landed this great playlist. How long will that song stay in there?
Oh, it varies. So I think most people on the platform, or if you're a user of Spotify, like New Music Friday, every week it's updated, right? So it's a complete drop, and it's a complete refresh of that playlist every week. Your favorite coffee house, your song, like, you know, your artist on CD Baby who's gotten 50 million streams, that particular person, I know who that is, I think has been there, what, 3 years? Almost 3 years?
Yeah, judging from the stats I was looking at, it's clearly been on that playlist for a while.
Yeah. So some of those playlists, like the internal curation stuff, it just varies. So, you know, if the song is performing well, it will stay on the platform, or rather on the playlist. And if the song isn't performing well, it'll just drop out of the playlist on the Spotify editorial side. With the individual private playlist, that, you know, those tend to rotate out. You know, I would say the longest we've ever had a song on a private playlist or an individual user-generated playlist is probably about 6 months, and that's on the outside limit, because it really behooves them to kind of switch things out. That being said, you know, I've seen songs on playlists that, you know, on private playlists that have gone longer than that. They just weren't projects we were working on. So it just varies. But I would say, on average, if your song stays on a playlist for about 3 months, with a minimum of one, then you're probably doing pretty well.
Okay. That's good to know. Just curious. And when you're, you know, so your role of pitching playlists, it's definitely something that's a brand new world. It's all new. It's not like there's this history of how people have gone about pitching playlists. How do you price that for artists that want to hire you to do this service for their upcoming album? Or is that how you even go about it? I mean, how do you engage with artists?
Yeah, so we'll get to the pricing in just a second. But, you know, again, we need to feel like there's a concerted, comprehensive, coherent campaign and effort around the project. So, you know, if someone comes to us and says, I'm waiting for my Spotify streams to blow up before I engage a publicist or before I engage other members of the team to sort of work this thing. So it's really go to it. Go get us ads, get us a million streams, get us a New Music Friday. We're probably out, you know. We can't make that happen just by ourselves, like a one-legged stool. So the first thing we need to be aware of is to see, first of all, we go through an audit, and the first thing we look at is, do you have existing traction on the platform? If you have existing traction on the platform, how much traction? Do you have 50,000 monthly listeners? Do you have 100,000? Do you have 10,000? And how prolific are you? When was your last release? When will be your next release? Are you going to talk about your releases on social media? Are people engaged? Are people wanting to hear more music from you? How are you making those things heard? Do you run Facebook ads? Are you working on engagement on other platforms that would drive listenership on Spotify? So we kind of go through that audit and evaluate if this is an artist we need to be working with. The presumption we always make when that music comes to us, is that the music is going to be fabulous. And sometimes, you know, it's not music that works for us, but then, but we need to be fairly confident that when we take the project on, we can get it placed on playlists. But there are other sort of, you know, related factors. And so some of those related factors are, what's your social media engagement, and how good is your PR game, and are tastemakers into what you're doing? So once we go through that sort of decision matrix, and as long as somebody on the pitch team, and we have 5 people pitching now, as long as somebody on the pitch team is passionate about the project, we take it on. So once we make that decision, then our rates are, we run a 12-week campaign, and it's $2,000 for the entire campaign. So, which I think is a pretty good deal. and you know, and then we get to work and we do launch calls, we do the launch, we run the campaign, we give you reports every week. Once a month we check in and let you know what curators are doing, where we've pitched it, what's going on, that sort of thing.
I have a question regarding, you know, the approach. You're typically talking about content that's new released, an artist that's maybe has a lot going on, but on the platform, there are lots of playlists that are geared more towards back catalog.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a market or, you know, have you worked with an artist that, you know, they may not be doing much now, but they had a back catalog that performed really well, and there may be a lot of playlists, like whether it's 80s music or 90s or very genre or niche specific that happened at certain times and places, or even just they've got some good tracks that might fit in, like, you know, the workout mixes and
exactly.
stuff like that.
Is
have you taken on any artists like that that may not have a whole bunch of newsworthy stuff happening now, but have had some of those things happen where you know there could be a path to success? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So there's sort of two different kind of sub-questions there. The first is the mood stuff. Almost always, when we start a new project or even if we're doing like a back catalog project, we go towards the mood playlist. So you're absolutely right. So things like workout playlists or things like dinner and a date playlists, you know, or something a bit more first date, you know, things like that. You know, we can totally get some of those placements there. The only thing we kind of say up front about those projects is that your traction or the number of streams or the adoption of the music in those kinds of playlists tend to not be astronomical or something that moves the needle in a big way unless you're a recognized, you know, brand. So for example, what do I mean by that? You know, like, you know, Journey songs, you know, or a playlist that addresses music that sounds like it could come from Boston, Journey, you know, any of those type of bands, you know, that there's sort of these like classic hits type of thing, but it's sort of like almost the cheesy classic hits.
So,
and you know, and everybody who like brings us those projects is fully aware of what that means. But at the same time, those playlists tend to not have like millions of followers. You know, they might have like 50, 60, 120,000 followers. And so what you're really doing there is just sort of like keeping sort of a low level buzz or hype around some of the music, just to keep that band or that artist or that music in sort of the public ear while they figure out next steps or, you know, just so that they can mine that back catalog. So, you know, the strategy there is different and the expectations are different and the way we do that approach is different. So, you know, that's different than saying having a brand new act or a band on its second single or third single wanting to really blow up based on the data that we've acquired or they've acquired on the first single release or the second single release.
Interesting. I have one last question for you because I know we're running out of time. Is this whole playlisting thing just a fad? Should I? Is it going to be over by the time I learn how to figure it out and learn how to do it? Is it all going to be like, hey, we're on to the next thing? Or is this here to stay?
Yeah. You know, it'll be over by the time we hang up. No.
Yeah, it's like, oh, great.
You know, I don't know what the future holds. Certainly, if I had a crystal ball, you know, that would be really helpful. But I think what we need to remember is this idea of digital streaming, you know, it's not a new thing. So Pandora was definitely the first there. And then, of course, we had RDO. And, you know, so I would focus less on the platform than I would about the consumption method. So Spotify, I expect to be around for a while. You know, maybe even a long time, but there are so many market factors that go into that. What I think we need to be paying attention to is the fact that the music business rebounded in a huge way in 2016 and 2015, mostly and and you know, the bulk of consumption was via streaming, and they made billions of dollars and they went into the black for the first time in years. So I don't know about playlisting. I'm guessing playlisting in some form or another is going to be around for a while, but really the bigger thing is that streaming is going to be around for a long, long while. So that would be sort of my take on the whole thing.
Yeah, and what I like about what Spotify is doing is they've set a new precedent that not only can the users do more on the platform, it's really a platform as opposed to the old school way. Even in down, you know, when the iTunes store was the only thing, you were at a store.
Right.
You were not at a platform. And
right.
Back in the day, walking into Tower Records, you walked into a store, you either bought or you didn't. Where
yep.
I like how the users have, they're figuring out how users want to use music in a way that is additive to those past, those actions that consumers used to take, that's actually building the industry. And the thing I love even more is that Spotify is actually opening up the back end with data for artists and letting artists engage on the platform and sort of build out things like adding merch, adding bios, and doing more than what was allowed in the past under the retail experience. So I'm very bullish on what they're doing, and I like the direction of where things are going.
Yeah, you know, and I think we need to remember, I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, part of the appeal for me in listening to radio was that whatever was being played on that particular radio station reflected the tastes and the viewpoint and sort of the, you know, the larger world experience of that particular DJ. Whereas the consolidation of radio kind of removed all that because somebody in some corporate office in the middle of nowhere was programming radio stations all across the country, which wasn't, I don't think, good for music as a whole. With individual user-generated playlists, you're back to that, you know? So for us, it's amazing because I can go to Curator A, who has like 12 playlists, and say, hey, what do you think about this music? And they might go, great, I'm going to add this. Or they might go, man, this thing just isn't working for me. And we kind of go, great, that's all right. We'll go to this other curator, you know, who has different tastes and who has a different sort of approach and has a different world perspective. And so, and we can talk to somebody, you know, in New York City, in Columbus, Ohio, Barcelona, Spain, you know, in the Philippines. And they all have different things that turn them on about music. And we can talk to all of them and get music placed based on, you know, what we care about, what they care about. And it's, like I said before, incredibly democratic. So that bodes well, I think, especially for independents, because now you're not at the mercy of one gatekeeper. You know, you have an entire community of people who care about, genuinely care about music, and who want to support independent music and all kinds of music. And so I just think, that just opens up a whole new world that, you know, in some ways we're going back to the future, right? So, yeah.
Well said. I think we should end there because it gave me chills and brought a tear to my eye. So we should. Well, Charles, thanks for being on the show. After I sign off, don't hang up on me because I got a question for you off the air that I want to ask you about. But
okay.
So if artists want to find you, they can find more information about your company and you and what you guys are doing over at streamingpromotions.com. And thanks for being on the podcast. I know this is going to be this episode's going to be a big hit. We've been talking about it for a while, and I'm just really excited to help artists understand the real benefit of the platform with a lot of doom and gloom out there about streaming. People have been confused, and I think it's important to separate the idea of what people get paid versus a platform that's actually driving more usage of music than ever before.
Yeah.
And kind of making sure that those, we don't throw out one with the other, because of course we want artists to get paid more, but that doesn't mean that the platform is broken. So thanks a lot, and we'll be in touch. I'm sure we'll have follow-up questions.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure. Always good to talk to you, Kevin.
Thanks again to Charles. And you can find information about what he does to get artist music on Spotify. If you're interested in hiring him for an upcoming release, you can head on over to streamingpromotions.com.
Again, I want your feedback, your questions, your comments about streaming and Spotify playlists. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209. You can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com or just head on over to the podcast website and leave a comment in the show notes. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. You can do so in the iTunes store, whatever you use to listen to podcasts. That way you don't miss an episode. We've got a lot of great episodes coming up, more interviews on the way, and more great discussion. With that, I'll catch you later. You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.